presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
You know, as a kid, I grew up as a huge sports fan. And, you know, back in the 80s, I don't know if kids today are still the same way, but back in the 80s, it was kind of the age of posters. You know, if you were a sports fan kid, you had posters all over your wall. I had, like, the Dale Murphy, Dwight Gooden stick ball poster where Gooden's pitching to Murphy, and Murphy's holding the stick in his hand. And there were a lot of kind of cool posters like that. There were a million ones involving the NBA guys of that era. It was kind of the poster era. So when I think about Georgia football, sometimes I think about who are the players in this team that the kids will put the posters on their wall of. And obviously, Jake Fromm is one of those guys, and DeAndre Swift is one of those guys. The defense has its share of those guys. Maybe J.R. Reed, maybe that to a certain extent. And there's also this crop of players who are about to burst on the scene for Georgia who may also be the kind of poster players one day, the kind of faces that you'd see on posters or maybe in more of the modern parlance on the front of the ticket or the front of the media guide or something like that. You know what a superstar player in college football looks like because that glossy image is kind of splashed all over the place. Well, of all the players that could have that mentioned about them, I don't know that there's anyone amongst Georgia fans right now, though, that generates more excitement than Zamir White does. Now, admittedly, this is all about the what's it going to look like once we get to see him variety, because let's face it, most of us haven't seen a ton from White. He is overcoming two knee injuries suffered over the last couple of years, and everything about White and what he's going to be is whispers of, did you hear he did this, and did you see that he did that, and my gosh, how good's he going to be? How much does this incredible highlight film from his high school career, how well is that going to translate to the college realm? That's just part of the conversation, but I don't think it's wrong when it comes to White, nor do I think it's an exaggeration. There is something here on Dog Nation Daily on Zamir, by the way, that I've been trying to get to for a couple of days. We just haven't had time. There's been so much going on, but I didn't want any more time to go by before we had a chance to talk about this. Back on G-Day, after the game, when we were at the UGA bookstore for our Dog Nation post-game show, as you know, we had a chance to talk to Georgia linebacker Nate Trespatrick. And Patrick, on that show, told a story about Zamir White that, gosh, if you weren't already excited, I think you're going to be more excited now than really ever before about what White may be able to do once he's fully cleared and fully ready to go during practice. Because apparently in the brief window of time that Natrez saw Zamir before the injury happened last summer, he was very impressed with what he saw. Now, let me set this up a little bit. Natrez in this conversation is going to say spring, but he's actually conflating spring with summer. White was a summer practicer for the Georgia Bulldogs last summer before all of this went down. But I asked him, I said, you know, Natrez, how good do you think Zamir White can be? But then I also kind of prefaced that question with, I guess you probably haven't even seen him practice all that much. And then Natrez Patrick said this.
But I have. So let me tell you, the spring right before he got injured. So he was practicing. I think he got injured towards the end of his first spring. Yeah. And when I tell you he ripped us apart, literally, like, so hard to tackle. No one could tackle him one-on-one. Like, because he actually did a couple scrimmages. I think he did the first scrimmage, maybe the second scrimmage.
This would have been August.
Of course, yeah. And we could not tackle him. Like, couldn't bring him down, and he ran really tough. So I'm excited to see what he's going to do to people in the opposite color jersey. So I can't wait, man. I'm glad his recovery is going well.
Yeah.
I hope that he'll be back soon.
I mean, come on, y'all. What do you do with that? How excited does that get you for what you may see from Zamir White once the fall rolls around? And to use Natrez Patrick's own words, once he's doing these kinds of things to guys in another team's jersey, wearing another color jersey, how much fun is that going to be? Because Natrez Patrick's a proud guy. Those other Georgia defensive players, they're proud guys. They don't like admitting that anybody on the offensive side of the ball got the best of them. How many times have we heard that story of how much these knockdown dragouts occur behind closed doors during these private scrimmages? But Natrez says in those couple scrimmages that he had before the injury took place, we couldn't bring him down. We couldn't tackle him. He was making guys miss. I don't know about you, but that makes me really, really want to get a chance to see Natrez Patrick on the field this fall. That gets me really, really excited about all of that. That's just a really fun thing to think about. Now, does what Kirby Smart says and what he has said kind of match up with all of this? Well, this is really more about, is he on his way back to being able to do the kinds of things that Natress Patrick said he was doing last year before that second knee injury occurred. And frankly, when it comes to Kirby on Zamir this spring, it was kind of coy, right? I mean, sometimes Kirby seemed to kind of keep his cards very close to the vest with this. I mean, you want to go back to the beginning of the spring, as I told you on Dog Nation Daily when that happened, frankly, I left that first press conference with Kirby kind of a little disappointed that Kirby didn't have more favorable, more positive things to say about Zamir White. Caution was clearly in the air, and that was seemingly going to be the tone they tried to set with Zamir all spring long. In fact, here is what Kirby said going back to March about how they were going to kind of take it slow when it comes to Zamir. Here's Kirby.
Well, I don't know that I can answer how much of it. I mean, that's going to come into fall camp. I think anytime you have a non-contact ACL and then you have a second one, you've got to be careful because we're talking about two different knees and really a completely non-contact injury. So when that happens, it makes you wonder, hey, is the kid going to be able to progress this time as fast as he did last time? So for us, he's going to be able to do some. I mean, he's running. He's running really well. He's doing a lot of straight line stuff. He's just not going to be involved in the scrimmaging and the contact part. So ultimately, how do I know he's going to contribute to the team? I don't know that. I'm not going to know that until probably early in fall camp. I'm very pleased with his work ethic. I mean, he knows that's his future. He takes care of his knee. He rehabs hard. He does everything we ask him to do. I think Ron is kind of one of the best in the country at dealing with this. When you look at the significant injuries he's dealt with Gurley and Nick Chubb, especially at that position. So he has somebody really good to rely on in regards to that. And Samir's managed that really well.
So Kirby Smart says, listen, I'm not going to make any promises about how much he's going to contribute this season. I don't know. I don't know if this knee recovery for Zamir is going to be like the one last time was. That's what Kirby Smart said at the beginning of the spring. And after the G-Day game concluded on April 20th, a game that obviously Zamir did not play in, but kind of one final time to talk to Kirby about where things kind of stood with Zamir White. Once again, Kirby was pretty noncommittal about, listen, I'm not making any promises about anything with what this young man's going to be able to do on the field this fall. Here was Kirby from that day.
I mean, he's fine. He's doing well. We're expecting him to come back. He's right where he needs to be, according to Ron Corson's schedule of knee injury. He does individual. He goes out and does blitz pickup and walkthroughs. He catches balls, but he doesn't do competitive contact.
So no competitive contact, but other than that, kind of right where he needs to be. We'll have more on that little phrasing in just a moment, because I do think that's interesting from Kirby. And if you're watching on video, the other thing you've seen is some of the video that our buddy Connor Riley shot from the pregame warmups that day, where I don't know what kind of physical condition he is in terms of his knee, but in terms of the physical condition of how he looks in a uniform, Zamir White seems pretty healthy, all things considered, and seems to be in really good shape there. The knee itself, a little more difficult to evaluate, but in terms of being ready to rock and roll, he certainly looks the part of being a running back capable of doing big things in the SEC. And when you see the way Zamir looks in that video, it's a lot easier to imagine Natress Patrick saying, we couldn't tackle him back when he was healthy. It's a lot easier to understand kind of how that gets there. But for a little deeper look at the current health situation, Kirby says right on track, and Kirby mentions Ron Corson. Well, we here on Dog Nation Daily, we also got a chance recently to talk to another guy that talked to Ron Corson about the health of Zamir White. And maybe it's just tone of voice, because frankly, what Kirby says and what former Georgia running back Robert Edwards is about to say are pretty similar, but Kirby kind of says it in a way that's kind of loud and kind of forceful and makes you wonder, is the news really as good as I want for it to be? Robert Edwards has a slightly different tone in his voice, and this is the kind of thing that, once again, as a Georgia fan, makes you feel good that you may be heading towards a fall where Zamir White can be a big part of the offensive story for George. In fact, here is Robert Edwards relaying the message that he got about the health of Zamir White.
Talking to Ron Corson, he's right on target of being ready for the season. He's strong. Everything looks bright for him. So I think he's just excited to have an opportunity to get out on the field. Right now, he's just doing a few things during individual drills, no real contact. But just to be a part of the drills and a part of his group, I think he's excited and he's looking forward to the season.
So one way or another, it's actually probably a good sign that the message coming about White is consistent. Robert Edwards says, hey, he's right on track. Kirby Smart on G-Day says he's right on track. But maybe what's even more fun than that is the fact that Natress Patrick says, I saw him before he got hurt, and let me tell you, this is a player that Georgia fans are going to want to see tearing up opposing defenses. You know, frankly, I won't even hide my excitement for a chance to see White on the field. I can't wait for this opportunity, and I sort of get the feeling from conversations I have with many of you that a lot of Georgia fans feel the very same way. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. Live on video today, 10 a.m., Dog Nation. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we are available as a podcast pretty much wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. We just really appreciate you being with us on the show today. We'll talk to Mike Griffith coming up in just a couple of moments. There are a couple draft-related items I want to talk to Mike about, and one of the things in particular is some of the Georgia players that may factor big in next year's draft. I think Mike's going to have some interesting things to say about that. We will do that in a moment. Let me also let you know about this, that coming up on Monday here on Dog Nation Daily, I am really excited about being able to tell you about why this summer around Dog Nation is probably going to be the most fun summer we've had here on Dog Nation Daily and around DogNation.com. And this includes many of you. There's something that a lot of you have been saying, hey, when are y'all going to do this? When are you going to do that? Well, I was in a meeting yesterday. I got to tell you, we got some really fun stuff coming up, and I can't wait to personally invite each of you to be a part of it a couple different times here this summer. This is going to be an amazing summer around Dog Nation, and it's just going to be a great, great time. So please make sure that you're with us around this time on Monday's show. I'll do my part to tell you about this a couple days between now and then. But on Monday, we have a really fun announcement about a brand new thing we're going to be doing this summer around Dog Nation, and a great opportunity for you to just really have a great time with us. I cannot wait to tell you all about that. That big announcement is coming up on Monday. But before that, though, here on Dog Nation Daily, it's time to go around the doghouse, presented today by our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And I want to go back to yesterday's edition of Dog Nation Daily for a moment when Jeff Sintel was on the program. We had a chance to talk to Jeff about five-star linebacker Mecale Sherman. And my question to Jeff was this. Jeff, we had a lot of chatter about Sherman around G-Day, and after that, it seems like things have kind of gone quiet a little bit, at least in terms of Sherman himself personally. There's been a lot of online chatter about Sherman. But kind of where do things stand right now with the five-star linebacker? And here is the update that Jeff gave us on Sherman yesterday. Here's Jeff.
In the wake or even during his official visit to Ohio State last week, that crystal balls continue to pop up for Georgia. With Sherman, I have a feeling that the following is going to happen. I have a feeling now that he's seen Ohio State, he'll probably take maybe one more visit, and that will be to LSU.
The reason why I play that audio from Jeff is because the news now may be even better than what Jeff related as being yesterday. Jeff says, hey, you saw he was at Ohio State, but even while he was there, there was a lot of talk about Georgia, a lot of online predictions from recruiting insiders saying, we think Sherman's going to land with the Dogs. Jeff says, the next domino to fall, likely maybe the only other domino to fall, is maybe there's a chance that Mecale Sherman also takes a visit to LSU. Well, here's great news for a Georgia fan. Apparently, that potential visit to LSU, apparently you don't have to worry about that anymore because of something that Sherman himself put on social media last night. Let me show you this tweet from Mecale Sherman, who now says, it's between Ohio State and Georgia. No interviews. I appreciate the coaches for presenting me opportunities and the fan bases which came with them. Appreciate you all. I want to commend Mecale Sherman here for something for a moment. How refreshing is it to see this young man who has been so open during the entirety of his recruiting process? He has liked George and talked about that openly. He has closed off speculation about where he's not going. He was at Ohio State recently. Some people seem to think that the nature of that visit leads them to believe that he may soon pick Georgia. But this is not a young man who's necessarily, you know, been, you know, kind of in the shadows, in the darkness with his recruitment. He's been pretty open and honest with the entire thing. And on Twitter, he now says, hey, I'm down to these final two. It's either going to be Georgia, it's going to be Ohio State. It sounds like he's kind of shutting things down from a communication standpoint. But something else to let you know, though. Apparently, right before Sherman decided to go radio silent, he did talk to our own Dog Nation recruiting insider, Jeff Sintel. And my understanding is we're actually going to hear from Sherman today. He's going to update his recruitment as a part of Before the Hedges presented by Kroger a little bit later on this afternoon. So we'll get more of an update on this, but it certainly seems like the next big domino that could potentially fall for this 2020 recruiting class is Sherman potentially choosing between Georgia and Ohio State with a lot of seeming momentum for the Dogs in this one. Does what we hear from Sherman later on today make us as Georgia fans feel better or worse about this? Well, I guess we'll have to wait until 3 p.m. to decide, because honestly, I haven't heard what Sherman has had to say, but I guess we'll all hear it today, 3 p.m., as a part of Before the Hedges presented by Kroger, an update coming on the five-star linebacker. But interesting from him that he says, my recruitment's down to just these two schools. It's Georgia, it's Ohio State. Thanks to everybody else replying along, I'm now down to the Buckeyes and the Dogs, which a lot of people thought it was going to come down to all the time anyway. And we'll see if Georgia can now win this head-to-head battle between the Ohio State Buckeyes and Georgia. This should be a fun one to watch. It's Around the Doghouse, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And whether you need foundation repair or basement waterproofing, or you've got a crawl space issue you got to get taken care of, Engineered Solutions of Georgia are the ones to help you, and they can offer you a lifetime of support. So if it's a crack foundation, wet basement, damp crawl space, whatever, you can have one of their qualified technicians come out and take good care of you. They're the ones that we trust here around Dog Nation, because they're the ones that have a full-time engineer on staff. Simply give them a call. It's 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now. Yesterday on the program, I talked a lot about those freshmen potentially making a big impact on the Georgia defense this season. There was one name in that conversation that I did not mention yesterday that I think we do need to mention today for a couple of reasons. Because of what Kirby Smart said, because of what I think the fans are going to see more from him this fall. We will do that later on. But for now, let's talk to our buddy Mike Griffith right here on Dog Nation Daily.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Here on Dog Nation Daily, we'll say hello to Mike Griffith here. Good coverage of the NFL draft over the last couple days. A lot of Georgia names factor prominently in that discussion. And Mike, if you don't mind, that's kind of where I want to begin our conversation here today. You know, there's a lot of data points you can pay attention to. It's the seven players Georgia did get drafted. It's the couple relatively high-profile names that didn't get drafted. Maybe some from that draft crew for Georgia didn't get drafted as highly as they wanted to, or maybe as highly as they should have been had they, you know, chosen to leave school to come out early. And you can kind of process all of that in your own way. I guess, though, on the grading of a pass-fail basis, I do think the draft ends up being a pretty good commercial overall for Georgia, more good than maybe less than good. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. You know, you get, you know, seven players picked, yay, and I think that's good. You know, I think it shows that, you know, Kirby Smart and Georgia are developing NFL talent. You know, and really, a couple of the early entrants were Kirby guys. But realistically, you know, a lot of these guys were Mark Richt guys. And, you know, next year is when the Kirby effect really kicks in, and we'll see a lot of players from Georgia drafted. I wanted to go offline here, B.A. Usually I ask the questions, but I wanted to bring up a stat that I thought was fascinating, and I wanted to make sure our Dog Nation Daily listeners and viewers heard this. When it came to the NFL draft, we all know how powerful that the SEC is, and that every year the SEC has more players selected than any other league. But oftentimes people outside say, well, it's just Alabama at the top, and it's a top-heavy league. Well, I wanted to run these numbers by you real quick from other leagues. Alabama obviously led the league with 10 picks, and that represented 15.8% of the players selected from the SEC. And that may seem like a lot, but as I looked around the country at other leagues, I saw that Clemson had six of the ACC's 27 picks. Clemson had 22% of the ACC's picks. Ohio State had 22.5% of the Big Ten's draft selections. Washington had 24% of the Pac-12's NFL draft selections. And sit down for this one. Oklahoma had 40% of the players that the Big 12 had selected. And that's another reason why Oklahoma didn't belong in the college football playoff ahead of Georgia last year. They played in a very, very weak league.
Yeah, I saw that you put that in one of your stories at DogNation.com. I thought that was pretty interesting. And frankly, I do think that the Big 12 draft stats are pretty glaring. And I was going to talk more about that in the show today as well. I'm glad you brought that up. But when we turn our attention to the 2020 draft for Georgia, I think it's kind of funny how a lot of this chatter is already emerging, including a lot of steam right now behind Jake Fromm. And obviously, we've seen Fromm really grow as a quarterback over the course of the last couple of seasons. And the one thing I keep coming back to for why Fromm seems to factor so prominently near the front end of the 2020 draft conversation right now is when it comes to one of the real rare skills, sort of those you either have it or you don't type things, Fromm is just a really accurate quarterback. I want to say he was, what, ninth in the country last year in yards per attempt at 9 per throw. He was, what, 11th, I want to say, in overall completion percentage, near 68%. You know, those are the kinds of things that not every quarterback is going to be able to match. When it comes to Fromm as a potential, not just first-round pick, but as Mel Kiper has suggested, top 10 pick, for me, it all comes down to the Fromm accuracy. Do you agree with that sentiment? Is that what you think potentially is going to be Fromm's ticket into the first round where you choose to leave next year?
Not necessarily, and I'm going to tell you why. All we heard about was Drew Lock being a first-round pick last year. Going into the season, I mean, this is the game that we all play. Everybody's a first-rounder right now. Now the guys from Georgia that didn't get picked or went later said, yeah, I was hearing that about me too. Everybody's a first rounder. But it's like Dick Vitale when you watch him call basketball. Everybody's a PTPer and is a championship contender. But there's obviously only so many that actually are. When it finally filters down, when push comes to shove, what we learn about the NFL draft process is it is the exact opposite of recruiting. Whereas in recruiting, we talk about, oh, he can do this well, he does this well, he does this great, he does this great. And we just assume they'll get coached up to learn all the other stuff they're not good at. In the NFL draft, it's what he doesn't do well. He doesn't do this, he doesn't do that, he doesn't do this. It's a much more grueling and difficult process. Jake Fromm does have weaknesses. They will be exposed by the combine, by the game film. But right now, because he is a marquee player, on a national championship contender, Jake is going to have a great opportunity to prove that he has the it factor. And to me, that will ultimately control whether or not Jake Fromm goes in the first half of the NFL draft next year. B.A., he's got to win the big game. And the big game is the national championship. And it's tough. Because I don't think Jake has other measurables that necessarily make him a top five franchise quarterback. He does not have the strongest arm in college football, nor would he be in the top half of the NFL in arm strength. He does not have the tallest stature. That works against him. That is not a strength. His foot speed is merely adequate. But all this said, I think Jake Fromm is a championship quarterback. I think he's a tremendous decision maker. I think he's unbelievably accurate. But just being realistic about it, I'm going to say the things that the NFL scouts are going to say at the end of the day. And he's not going to be surrounded by Georgia talent. It's going to be a lot more level playing field. And where you go has everything to do with it. As I pointed out, the example I love to use is Steve Young. With Steve Young, and I don't know, maybe this is too old for some of the people that are watching and listening, but when Steve Young was with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who was he? He was a nobody. He goes to the San Francisco 49ers, and he becomes a Hall of Famer. So a lot of it has to do with the team needs, and also I think Jake needs to prove this year that he's got the it factor. He's got to get over the Alabama hump.
I think one of the interesting storylines as well for Georgia in 2020 is going to be the potential this team could lose four of its starting offensive linemen to the draft. Andrew Thomas, I think, is virtually a shoo-in to leave at the end of the year. I think Isaiah Wilson could. I think that Ben Cleveland might. I think that Solomon Kinley will at least consider it. Four starting offensive linemen, they're at least in the mix to potentially be, you know, drafted players next season. Cleveland's name, for instance, is already on kind of some of these early big boards that are out there. Thomas is going to be at the, you know, the virtual top of seemingly all of these. Now, Georgia's got depth behind these guys, but we could be heading into 2020 with at least the possibility that the Georgia offensive line looks very different than it expects to look in 2019.
No question. And, of course, that will affect Jake Fromm's decision. And why wouldn't it? You lose those four bodyguards, and I do think you lose all four of them. I really do, unless somebody gets an injury and doesn't get to play the snaps they want. All those guys are NFL players. We know that. So you lose your four offensive linemen. Jake Fromm says, wow, I really got to go. J.J. Holloman looks and says, I'm losing my quarterback. You know, DeAndre Swift's already said he's probably leaving. I mean, you know, right there we're talking about seven potential first-team All-SEC guys that aren't going to be back next year on offense. We're not even talking about Richard McCown on defense. So to your point, B.A., it's going to be a mass exodus. It's going to be bittersweet. Because these are championship caliber players. These are great football players. Yes, if they all came back, couldn't Georgia win the national championship? Of course they could. But they're not going to come back. So 2019 is the window. This is the immediate window. Now 2020 is a reload year. It's not a rebuild, okay? Because Kirby Smart has done an incredible job recruiting. So it's not a rebuild, it's a reload. And we don't know what that next group of Bulldogs will do, but we do know that they've been ranked among the best in the country. And we're going to find out if Georgia truly is the emerging dynasty that many of us believe it is, with the recruiting classes they put together, with the player development, when you look at some of the position coaches that they have, particularly guys like Sam Pittman, and I think Charlton Warren was an unbelievable hire. Kirby obviously has confidence in Schumann and Lanning, and James Coley with his South Florida recruiting connections. And now this year we get to find out more about Coley as a coordinator. We will truly find out about the future of Georgia football in 2020. We know that this group right here has got what it takes. We know that, B.A. So to your point, yes, I think there will be a mass exodus on offense. And to build off of your point, I think the window is 2019, and I think the sense of urgency is higher than ever for Georgia to win the SEC championship and the national championship this year.
You know, I'm interested in DeAndre Swift as well because, you know, on the one hand, the NFL seems to be moving away from the idea of first-round pick running backs. There's a lot of skepticism about that among many NFL GMs, and yet for the guys that do seem to fit well in that conversation, Swift looks like those guys. He is a threat in the passing game. He does have the kind of lateral quickness. In a lot of ways, he seems to really fit the modern NFL, the way that Alvin Kamara seems to work for the New Orleans Saints offense, the way that Christian McCaffrey works for the Carolina Panthers offense. My understanding of Swift, he seems like a similar kind of player. Do you think that Swift has the potential? I'll take the word potential out because I think obviously we'd agree with that. Do you think that Swift is a first-round pick where he, too, consider leaving in 2020?
I'll put the potential back in. You took it out. I'm putting it back in, B.A. I think he is leaving in 2020. I think he does have the potential to be the first-rounder. The issue with Swift is the durability question. We don't know if DeAndre can get through a whole season healthy. Quite frankly, and it sounds unfair, but I'm speaking in NFL terminology. These are the same questions they're going to ask. You know, we know that he had the double hernia surgery with the groin issue, right? We know that he's had a foot problem. We know that he's been limited in some games in terms of carries. Now, last year, DeAndre Swift went through treatment every day, virtually every day of the week. That kid was going through treatment just so he could practice. So we saw a guy soldier through some incredibly painful ailments last year post-surgery, post-double hernia surgery. And he deserves a tip of the cap for that, to still have a 1,000-yard season. Now he's had a completely healthy off-season. And this coming season, we're going to find out how durable DeAndre Swift really is, because Kirby Smart is on record saying, I'm going to give him as much work as he can handle. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Brian Herrien, and I think Brian is an NFL player. I think he will be drafted, albeit later in the draft. And I think Brian will have over 1,000 total yards and potentially double his career yardage, touchdowns, and touches. So I think Brian Herrien figures heavily into the mix. Now, that said, DeAndre Swift is going to be watched for his production this year, because this is it. And the durability is the question mark. And if DeAndre can't show that he's durable, he's not going to be anybody's first-round pick and could slide to the third round. So a lot is going to be on the production. As you said, the talent is unbelievable. You cannot deny the moves, the cuts, the spins, and the ability of DeAndre Swift. But if he ain't out there on Sunday, all that talent doesn't do you any good. So he's got to prove himself durable this year, and that's why the word is potential right now for him as a first-round pick.
Let me finish up with a name that I think is really interesting in terms of how high his ceiling could be or maybe achieving a little less than that, and that's Eric Stokes. Because if you look at the way that DeAndre Baker was developed over the course of his career, and I'm going to use develop for lack of a better word because sometimes it's difficult to know, was he always that good and just sort of proved it once he got to the college level, or did he really become that kind of cornerback under the watchful eye of Kirby Smart? Sometimes it's hard to know, but a guy that seems to be charting a similar course behind him is Eric Stokes, who got a chance to step in and start last year and made the most of that opportunity. And I think, based on what you saw in a brief glimpse during G-Day and what you've kind of assumed has been going on during spring practice, I think he sets up well this year to kind of be a really dependable cornerback for Georgia. I don't know if he goes number 30 overall next season. That'd be probably asking a lot. But to go from a three-star recruit to a pretty respected NFL draft pick, it would not surprise me to see Eric Stokes travel down that road, because I've seen him knock balls out of the air, and that's what cornerbacks are supposed to do at the NFL level. What do you make of Stokes' future, and are you as kind of fascinated by the way that he's developed and grown over the time that he's been at Georgia as I am?
Absolutely, and I do think he's leaving. I think you're going to lose three-fourths of your secondary next year, because I think Richard LeCount's also leaving. Stokes, believe it or not, has a higher ceiling than DeAndre Baker, because he has speed. We saw that with Mecole Hardman. Mecole Hardman was only a second-year receiver, right? And yet, he ran that 4.33, and the Chiefs rang the bell in the second round. Eric Stokes is a 4.3 guy, and Baker ran a 4.52. Baker got drafted in spite of his 40 time and his measurables. He did not have a good combine, and yet, and still, his skill level was such, and the cornerback class was such, that he was the first corner off the board at number 30. Stokes, with that 4.3, upside. Now, here's my question, though, B.A. Why wasn't he starting earlier? I still remember sitting in the press box at Missouri watching him come in for Tyson Campbell. You remember, Tyson had that fumble recovery for a touchdown, and something happened. I think he separated his shoulder in that game, and so he was throwing up and feeling ill. And he wasn't able to return. And Stokes got put in and was absolute lights out. Lockdown coverage. I mean, knocking down balls from Drew Locke. Unbelievable things he did, knocking down passes in the end zone. In fact, that was the first time in over a year that Drew Locke did not have a touchdown pass. It was that Missouri-Georgia game. But to get back to what we were talking about, I do think Stokes has a high ceiling. I don't know what I don't know, though. There's a reason that he wasn't starting ahead of Tyson Campbell, okay? All we see is Saturdays. We don't see the practices day in and day out like Kirby Smart and his staff. So I want to know why he wasn't starting ahead of Tyson Campbell. I want to know what I don't know. What I see on Saturdays, though, looks spectacular. I think he's a wonderful cornerback. I think he's got a high ceiling with that 4.3 speed. We meet him. We talk with Eric Stokes. He's an unbelievable ambassador. Tremendously likable young man with charisma. I can't say enough good things about him. I think he could be a first-rounder, but I dial it back because he wasn't a starter last year but for three or four games. So what don't I know that Kirby Smart knows? Why was Tyson Campbell ahead of Eric Stokes when every Saturday it seemed like Eric Stokes was outperforming Tyson Campbell? So if he continues to play like he played last year in three or four games as a starter all season long, I think he absolutely has first-round potential.
I think it'll be an interesting story to watch unfold during this fall. And, Mike, we'll look forward to reading your coverage of it at DogNation.com, including the days ahead here as well. Thanks for being with us on Dog Nation Daily, and we'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
Thanks, B.A. Great job.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
I know it sounds like you hear a conversation like that, a lot of juniors who could be leaving and the possibility of some of this kind of stuff happening. And in some cases, some of the guys that left after this past year's season, it seems like Georgia could still use. And I guess from a fan's perspective on this, I'm a little different than some people are. This is not the kind of thing that makes me nervous at all. And it's really for a couple of reasons. I think we're heading into a new era of college football where I don't... the old school idea, Nick Saban, who sounds like 1,000 years old sometimes when he talks about some of this stuff anyway, but if you're not a first-round pick, you shouldn't leave school. That's the way things used to be. That's the way that things were years ago. I don't know that's the way that things are now necessarily. I think being in the NFL, even if it's not as that kind of first-round pick sort of bonus baby type thing, just being in the league and getting a chance to work towards your second contract, that may be enough for a lot of these young men right now. After all, they're essentially playing for free in college as it is. Some money may be better than no money, and so we may be in a new age where the first-round guarantee isn't required for guys to want to leave school early. It may be as big a change, you know, over the course of the last couple of years when Chubb and Michelle and those guys decided to say from 2016 to 2017, the world's kind of evolved a good bit since just then. So we're kind of in a new age when it comes to stuff like that. Plus, I'll keep saying this over and over again, that who you bring into a program is more important than who's going out. And frankly, if you've got a glut of seniors, I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but I can't think of another way to say it. If you've got some sort of clog in the pipeline, then a lot of freshmen are going to say, ooh, that's not the place I want to go. You know, it was the fear of Elijah Holyfield coming back that we've been told led Trey Sanders to end up going to Alabama. At least that's part of what played into that. Sometimes hard to know what the real story is, but the fear of a senior who chooses to return in some cases is kind of a turnoff for recruits. So I love the idea of juniors, you know, develop as a freshman, you know, learn the game a little bit as a sophomore and go out as a junior and dominate and then go make yourself some money. So if the 2019 season sees a mass exodus for Georgia in the NFL, to me that's all the better way to start bringing in more talent. I'll miss some of the guys who are gone because obviously we followed their careers for a while, but it just opens the door for more talent to come in, and that's the way that successful programs, I think, are supposed to work. Before I do our SEC through, let me remind you that Mother's Day is coming up. Sunday, May 12th is the day to mark down your calendar. Now, it's probably on your calendar. You just need to make sure that you pay close attention to that. And there's really no better way to get ready for a mom and celebrate her on Mother's Day than to make a brunch for a special day. And you can actually do this right there at your house when you go to Kroger and get the stuff that you need, including, how about this? Have you thought about doing like some Prosecco and getting some nice mimosas? You know, that's kind of a staple of a cool Mother's Day brunch. Don't go wait in some long line and, you know, spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars at some overpriced restaurant. Go to Kroger, get the really nice stuff there, make your own mimosas, your own little brunch, your own little meal, and Kroger will give you great savings. So please check that out as we head towards Mother's Day. All right, a few SEC stories I want to get to, and this is going to be a fun one. You may have seen that four-star quarterback and Florida early enrollee Jalen Jones has decided to put himself in the transfer portal very soon after enrolling, which would seem to be the exact opposite of what Dan Mullen said is supposed to happen in college football. Little hypocrisy here from Mullen. Do we have the quote? Can we show this on the screen of what Dan Mullen has previously said about this kind of stuff in the past, which would seem to be, at least a lot of people took it at the time, as a little bit of a jab towards Kirby Smart? Here's what Dan Mullen said before that a lot of people thought was in reference to Justin Fields. He says, I think we did a poor job recruiting if guys were coming in and then immediately walking out the door because it was something different than what they thought it would be, and we lied to them during recruiting. Or we sold them on a dream that wasn't true. Dan Mullen says, if that happens at a place, that's wrong. What has happened to Florida with Jalen Jones to have him decide that he wants to leave school so soon after enrolling? Is this an example of hypocrisy from Mullen? Here is ultimately what the bad news is going to be for a lot of Georgia fans on this. You're going to want to call out Mullen for his hypocrisy. You're going to want to point out the incongruity between his statement and the Florida quarterback's actions here. The problem is, to take that seriously, you have to have shame, and Mullen has none. So therefore, he'll never acknowledge the fact that what he said about many people took to be a reference towards Kirby Smart and Justin Fields was just all hot air and bloviating and big talk, and he actually, in his own sense, is kind of violating his own principles. You'd have to have a sense of shame to be able to acknowledge that, and Mullen already has shown us that he doesn't have that. He's already shown us that his words aren't connected in any real way to any true sense of reality. This is a guy who's, you know, essentially, it's almost like a pro wrestling thing. I love the word kayfabe, where like in the world of pro wrestling, kayfabe means you have to pretend that it's real, even if most people know that it's fake. And yes, even a pro wrestling fan like me understands that. Well, Mullen's like the most kayfabe coach in the entire SEC. He's going around saying a bunch of stuff that he knows is a work, that he knows is put on, that he knows is just for show, but he'll never acknowledge otherwise. So yeah, Mullen here caught in kind of a hypocritical statement, but he'll never acknowledge that. Let me do a couple more quick stories here. Let me try to rattle through these. I want to hear from Kirby Smart in just a moment. I've kind of gone long just a little bit. Ed Orgeron had an interesting statement to make about why it was that they've had so much success recruiting wide receivers. He was on a Baton Rouge radio station. You'll probably are aware that LSU just got the commitment from five-star wide receiver Rakim Jarrett, and he mentioned the wide-open offense that LSU is going to be using this year, even saying they're going to have some four and five wide receiver sets. And what I think is kind of ironic about that is one of the reasons why I'm high on LSU this season, I've seen some preseason, some of these way too early top 25s that have LSU very near the top five right now. One of the reasons why I don't think that's an unrealistic expectation for LSU is not about the multiple wide receiver sets, the four receiver sets. It's about the running backs they brought into the program. I think that John Emery Jr., who Georgia fans know well, Ty Davis, who Georgia fans may also remember from the recruiting trail, I think the freshman running backs are actually what's going to make the biggest impact for LSU this season. So I think it's interesting that Orgeron's talking up wide receivers. It's really running backs that I think could be a difference maker on the field for the Tigers this year. I saw where Jimbo Fisher also talked about the search for the brand new Texas A&M athletic director, essentially confirming what many people believe, which is that he wants some sort of say in who ultimately they're going to hire. He wants a good working relationship. And I understand why Texas A&M might want to do this. After all, you don't want to make Fisher mad and have him start looking around. But I would also acknowledge A&M to be very careful with this. College football coaches are short-term hires. Athletic directors should be a little more long-term than that. Be very, very careful about the coach handpicking an athletic director, because at least in a certain sense, good programs do have a little bit of an independent working between the athletic director who's supposed to raise money and the football coach who's supposed to be worried about winning games right now. I think that A&M needs to be very, very careful with this. You saw where Mike Griffith a little earlier mentioned what has kind of been a little bit of a bad NFL draft for the Big 12 once again. I thought the stats on this were actually pretty surprising. So for the eighth straight year, according to ESPN, the Big 12 tied or had the outright lead for the least amount of draft picks for a Power 5 conference. And of course, Oklahoma had a bunch, and they had Kyler Murray going number one overall. Second year in a row they've done that. But they only had, 10 players drafted in the first three rounds of the draft altogether? 25, 26, I think, total? Yeah, 26 drafted in total. I'm sorry, that is not a Power 5 league playing at the same level the other leagues when you have that little draft success. So I think a little criticism of the Big 12 may be warranted on that. I was also going to do a little thing on Nick Saban, Alabama. I'm running short on time. Let me push that back for tomorrow, but I think there's some interesting stuff coming out of Tuscaloosa. We're going to need to talk about that in the days ahead. For now, though, let me make that your SEC through, because I want to get back to Kirby Smart here on Dog Nation Daily. And one of the things we talked about during this portion of the show yesterday were those freshman linebackers, the Kobe Dean and Nolan Smith, and the impact they could make for Georgia this season. And upon further review, I think it's probably fair to add another name into that discussion, another name into that mix, because after G-Day was over back on April the 20th, Kirby Smart had some really nice things to say about a Georgia safety, Lewis Cine, a big hitter, a guy that apparently had some wild plays during the spring. Here's what Kirby said about him.
He's an exciting player. He's probably behind from a learning curve standpoint, because we teach a lot of defense to our secondary, and he's made some wild plays this spring. And that doesn't mean he's going to go out there and start. That means that he's competing for playing time. We're making him play both safety spots, which is probably more taxing on him, but that gives us the ability to play him at either spot if anybody gets injured. He's going to be competing with guys for playing time. I think where he's going to really show up is special teams, because he is a very physical, likes contact. He's a hitter.
It's that last phrase that Kirby uses that leads me to a prediction. Kirby says he's a hitter. And in the day and age where some of that's not quite as allowed as it used to be back in the Greg Blue, Thomas Davis era, there is still some room for physicality in the world of college football. And Lewis Cine being a big hitter, I think, is going to make him very popular. I think a lot of Georgia fans are going to really like what he brings to the table, because he is going to separate would-be ball carriers or receivers from the football. I think that's going to be a really fun thing to watch, and it's a part of what I think is going to be a really deep safety competition. You know, we know that J.R. Reed's a very good player. I'm expecting a pretty good season from Richard LeCount. But Otis Reese, who's been here for a year, Lewis Cine, who's been here for spring practice, those guys working their way in and trying to fight for some playing time, that safety position, that competition there could be a really fun one to watch. So I can't wait for that. You know, I've said it over and over that when it comes to freshmen, if you're playing on this year's Georgia defense, this is a different kind of position battle to win in years past. It's all luxury items because Georgia's got enough capable players just from the guys who are already on the roster. But if a Tyreek Stevenson comes in and earns some time at cornerback, even if it's limited time, if a Lewis Seen comes in, earns some time at safety, even if it's just limited time, if N'Kobe Dean and Nolan Smith, Jermaine Johnson, if they're earning a bunch of time on the field with that front seven, that may be more than limited time. That says a lot about those guys as young men, as they're not just, as we've said, not just following the footsteps of other guys who looked similar to them. They're actually charting their own path, which is a cool thing to see. Also cool to remind you, speaking of Gator Hayden, which we did a little earlier in the show, it's now been 914 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. Love doing it every single day. It's our Gator Hater Updater. We'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily.